All right, go ahead.
All right, well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call our BCPL meeting to order on this March 16th at 2 o'clock today. Just going down through our routine business, the first item is approving the minutes from March 2nd. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Doug, I so move.
I second.
Great. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion, edits? I thought the minutes looked great. Thank you, Twee. All right. See none. All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Hi, Doug.
Hi, Josh.
The minutes are approved. Moving to the loans, we have 7 loans in front of us today at $1.97 million. Is there a motion to approve the loan?
Doug, so moved.
I second.
And, okay, it's been moved and seconded. Rich, do you want to walk us through the 7 loans that we're looking at today?
Sure. I guess I would like to focus on a couple of unusual loans in today's packet. There are 2 loans to Dane County Drainage Districts, which are the first loans that BCPL has made to drainage districts in modern history. These loans are a little bit different. You know, normally with a general obligation loan, the municipality will levy a tax to pay the principal and interest when due. With a drainage district, they levy an assessment on lands that benefit from the drainage district projects. Say that 3 times fast. And each assessment is recorded as a lien against the benefiting property. You know, the district provides BCPL with a certification of assessed benefits to the board as part of the application. And in this case, because the loans are greater than 1 year, the loans required approval of the Attorney General, which was provided. The benefits to the land parcels are based on a formula which includes the number of acres, the water table factor, the yield factor, the land use factor, and it all comes into a formula that calculates the benefits to each parcel. Residential parcels in this case, these lands are near Sun Prairie, are assessed a minimum $75. So these, although there is no levying of a tax as in the general obligation loan, these loans are very safe because the assessments are recorded as a lien against the properties. Are there any questions about drainage districts?
Rich, I was just going to note one additional point. As you mentioned, there's statutory requirement that the AG approve those loans. And what we did in my office was that I was not personally directly involved in the review and approval process. My view is that since the statute specifically mentions the AG's office and I'm a member of this board, again, that's pursuant to the Constitution, that it makes sense for me to participate in the votes on those, but I just wanted to flag that issue so my fellow commissioners were aware of that.
And I guess just why is a drainage district different for AG approval, like in addition to commissioner approval?
So the reason it's different is not for trust fund loans, it's just general borrowing by a drainage district. So if the drainage district borrowed from a bank or borrowed through a bond or borrowed through anything, if the loan was going to be for more than 1 year, the AG's office would have to review it and confirm that that it was a valid and binding obligation of the drainage district. And I think the reason for that is just because, as Rich outlined, it's a little bit different than other types of loans. You know, rather than a general obligation which pledges the full faith and credit of the entire community, in essence, the obligation falls unevenly on the landowners within the district. And so I think for that reason is why that statutory provision came about, not necessarily for trust fund loans, but for any type of borrowing by a drainage district.
Any type of money.
Yeah. And Tom, just so I did have two quick questions I wanted to confirm with you. One is, do you share my assessment, or does BCPL staff, that I should continue to vote and not, there's no reason to abstain based on that issue?
I agree wholeheartedly, and I appreciate your decision to delegate the obligation for the review to, I believe, is your deputy in this case. I think that worked very well. So.
Great. And then the second question I had, and this is the other aspect of this that's unusual, is both the drainage district statute and the BCPL's process require review from my office. You know, normally you wouldn't be reviewing the same loan with two different parties, but that's provided for by statute. So I don't think there's any way around that. And that's not a reason not to move forward, but I just wanted to confirm again that BCPL staff agrees with that.
Yes, yes. If you think about it, the two reviews by the AG's office in this case are actually different reviews. The first one with respect to the drainage district borrowing, it's focusing on whether the AG's office believes that it's a valid and binding obligation of the drainage district, whereas the review of normal trust fund loans is focusing more on the procedures that were followed.
That makes sense, and Josh, I appreciate you pointing that out and Tom explaining that. So,
one other aspect of this drainage district loan that is different from normal loans is that the project specifications were required to be approved by DATCAP, and so that is another thing that's a little bit different about those two loans. The third loan that was a little bit different today was a revenue loan to the Village of Suring for the installation of fire hydrants and repairing their water tower. They desired to go with a revenue loan, which means that the payments are going to be made by the utility based on the water revenues that they receive. And we underwrote that revenue stream and believe that it is going to be more than sufficient to pay the principal and interest when due. Because there is a little bit added risk, and because there is no tax levy in this situation, we required a little bit higher interest rates. The interest rate on this loan is at 5% for 20 years, where our normal general obligation loans today are at 4% for 20 years. And that's all I have today on the loans.
Okay, thank you.
Rich?
Yes.
Doug and Josh, any other questions for Rich or the BCPL team?
None for me.
All right. Okay.
I'm good.
Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the seven loans, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
The loans are approved. Thank you, Rich. Moving down to old business, as Tom mentioned in his update earlier this month, that there might be Manduro Sanitation District might be at risk at not making both potentially their short-term and even their long-term payment, as we're looking at a little over or almost $350,000 still on this loan. And I know, Tom, in our conversations, you have been busy at work finding a solution, because none of us would want under our watch a default by any means. So we look forward to your update. And I also just want to share with the commissioner something that you will also notice on today's agenda is just the trust fund loan process. And so in conversations with Tom and our conversation at the prior meeting, it just seemed to be helpful for us to get some insight on this trust fund process, the trust fund loan process, so we can understand that, knowing the information that we are getting before these loans are granted as we move forward. So it's kind of a dual conversation today. First, what do we need to do with Manduro, and then looking at the larger process. So Tom, I'll just hand it over to you.
Thank you, Sarah. First of all, I didn't mean to scare anyone last week, but because of the fact that our loan payment date was going to fall before the date of the next meeting. I just thought it was important to give the board a heads up that we had received some information that we had a borrower that might not make a payment. So it was unusual to get that kind of notice that someone wasn't going to make a payment. But it appears at this point that both the short-term problem and the long-term problem have been resolved, or at least progress is being made on the long-term one. This year's loan payment has been made. We have received it from Mindoro, so that has been resolved. During the last meeting, I mentioned the fact that we didn't have all the information, and it appeared that there may have been some issues associated with a large dairy that was located within the district. But the district's lack of money did not result from any business difficulty, but rather from the district officials' unwillingness to actually levy a tax sufficient to repay the loan. The district is part of the town of Farmington, and after speaking with local officials, the town decided to loan money to the sanitary district to make this year's payment. And the town decided that they weren't willing to leave things as is, and in fact, they are now taking steps to convert the sanitary district into a town special utility district in order to give the town more control over the finances and to make sure that these type of events don't occur in the future. This is such an unusual event to have municipal officials fail to carry out their duties. I cannot give you another example of that in Wisconsin. So at this point in time, like I said, the short-term problem is resolved, and it appears to me that the long-term problem is well on its way to resolution. Are there any further questions on that?
Good job. Thank you.
My pleasure. And I do have to give credit to the local town officials, especially the town chairman, Mike Hesse, who has been great to work with there. So hats off to him.
And Tom, I guess the only thing I would ask just too is when Farmington turns that sanitary district into that special, what are they calling it now?
A special utility district, I believe is the word they use.
A special utility district. If you maybe will just keep us posted in your update once you know that that's finalized, that would be appreciated.
I will. Because clearly when that happens, our loan will be paid off at that point because the sanitary district will no longer exist. So I'll be happy to give you an update on that.
Thanks, Tom.
My pleasure.
Any other questions for Tom? We're glad that was already resolved. And then Tom, as we kind of talked about, I do think it would be helpful maybe just to give an overview of the trust fund process as we discussed on Monday, just letting commissioners know kind of how that process works and some of the information you get to help do the best we can to ensure the full faith and credit of these entities are going to pay back their loans.
I'd be happy to. And I'll try to keep my remarks as short as possible. And Rich is laughing at me because there are a lot of intricacies in some of the details, but what I'll try to give you is a 20,000-foot overview. So if you've noticed from when the loans come to the board for consideration, the vast majority of them are structured as general obligations of the borrower. In essence, the community pledges their full faith and credit and promises to levy a tax sufficient to repay the loan. If the borrower defaults on the loan, the law requires BCPL to intercept state aid. And for this category, there are so few situations where a community would ever run into an issue of being able to repay it that it's not even worth mentioning at this point.
It's never happened in my, 30 years on the board or whatever.
I don't think it's happened in, yeah.
Ever.
What,
yeah.
Ever.
1871.
Yep.
So for general obligation loans, we look at the total equalized value of property located within the borrower's boundaries. And we look at the total amount of general obligation debt outstanding. And as long as the ratio of that debt to the borrowing capacity of the applicant is relatively low, if it's less than 60%, we don't really delve more deeply into the finances of the applicant. If it's above 60, we do start poking in more, we ask more questions, and the closer it gets up to 100, we dig more deeply and try to make sure that they've got a plan for repaying the debt. Now, just because it goes above 80 or even 90% sometimes, that does not mean it's a risky loan or it's a dangerous loan. It just requires us to look more carefully at it. And there have been situations where borrowers such as the city of Menasha and Nisida had actually gotten very close to their total borrowing capacity, but they had a good plan for getting themselves back in good shape. And the BCPL State Trust Fund loan was an integral part of that. And both of those communities now have their debt back down to a much more manageable level, and they made it there by working with us. So for loans that are structured as a revenue loan, as Rich pointed out today, we look at the current and previous year revenue streams and the expenses associated with that entity. We want to make sure that we have a decent coverage ratio, that the ratio of the revenue coming in to the cost of repaying the loan is a good number. The statutes require that BCPL has a first position security interest in those revenues. And that gives us an added layer of protection. And in the event a revenue loan borrower would default, interception of state aid is also available. And so we've got several methods of protection on those loans as well. So again, just because it's a revenue loan does not make it necessarily a risky loan. It just requires us to look at more facts. The fact is, Wisconsin municipalities have got a great track record in repaying debt. And Wisconsin law does not allow municipalities to declare bankruptcy. And this combination has resulted in Wisconsin municipal borrowers having some of the lowest borrowing rates in the country. If you would compare a AA-rated community in Wisconsin against a AA-rated community in other states, our interest rates are lower because of that. The power to intercept a state aid certainly provides a strong incentive for communities to repay BCPL, but we've never had to even rely on that. But that power to intercept the state aid makes a state trust fund loan even safer than a Wisconsin municipal bond. So, as I pointed out earlier, the Mindoro loan concern resulted from a very different issue. The failure of local officials to carry out their legal responsibilities and actually levy a tax that had been approved through a properly adopted resolution. The community had sufficient general obligation debt capacity at the time we granted the loan, and they currently have a huge amount of general obligation debt capacity at this time. They've paid down their loan. The equalized value of the district has increased. They should have and could have levied the tax. They just didn't want to. So this type of issue doesn't present itself during financial analysis unless the community has already defaulted on a previous loan or bond, which, as we discussed, hasn't ever happened on our loans. It's a behavioral problem. It's unusual, and it's not a financial underwriting problem. So in summary, our loans are a very safe investment. The information that we obtain from our borrowers is sufficient for us to be able to analyze the risks associated with it. I think we've done a good job, and history backs that up in the fact that, again, there have been no defaults in the history of the program. So I hope that little overview gives you a little bit better idea of what we do, how we do it, and why we do it. And if you have further questions, I'm more than happy to answer.
No, thanks, Tom. I appreciate that, especially knowing that this seemed to be a very unique situation, but just revisiting the process, I think, was helpful, knowing that we approve millions of dollars almost every other week. Any questions, Josh or Doug, about the process?
Nope.
None for me.
Okay. And Tom, that was brief. That's good.
I'm trying.
I know. I liked it. It was perfect. It was perfect. Moving on to new business. In addition to the trust fund loan process, just an update on the WMFTA survey results. So as I mentioned, Doug and Josh, to all of you, I wanted to circle back with our beneficiaries because what we did during COVID and stepping up and providing that special distribution of $5.25 million is something that the fund has never done before. And we all thought it was an unprecedented time and there was unprecedented need. And so what I wanted to make sure we went back with our beneficiaries and asked, was it helpful and how did you use those funds? And so WMFTA surveyed their members. They had over 100 librarians participate. And as you can expect, it was overwhelmingly positive. Everybody was incredibly grateful for the resources that were provided and how we were able to do this so quickly. So as you all know, COVID hit in March. We had these conversations and voted at the beginning of April, and the funds were distributed by the end of April, beginning of May. So they were really able to impact their students and faculty directly. In fact, I just want to read actually a few quotes that we got directly. One is, thank you. The extra emergency distribution that you guys did was timely and it supported the libraries and our staff and students. And without it, I believe the students and teachers would have really struggled more to get the materials and to be able to teach and learn. And many of our teachers actually were able then as a result to use ebooks and online learning content. And then another quote was, it's because of the Common School Fund and the special distribution that my district is able to be in a position to have resources available during COVID. And I was able to purchase resources that my district would otherwise not be able to. So thank you. So I just wanted to kind of share that with you. They talked about kind of their top three expenditures were e-learning books, software, online materials, and hotspots. And then the third category, surprisingly, was books. And what they were saying is that because the books that they had in they needed to buy more for kids to actually bring home. So those were the kind of top three categories, and they were thrilled. And I think we should all, while this was kind of unprecedented, I think be proud that we were able to step up and serve our beneficiaries in a way that we've never done before. Part of the conversation too, as I mentioned, with WMFTA is as you look at the 2021 school year, do you think that you are going to need another special distribution if that is something that we would be able to do? And the answer is, they don't know. I mean, they are looking at going back into the classroom. And on top of that, the American Rescue Plan that did just pass last week has millions of dollars coming into Wisconsin to help schools transition. And so they believe that they will likely be in a good place. But they did ask to, if nothing else, maybe revisit something, for example, like the timing of the distribution. And this is something that Tom and I have talked about because the distribution, as you all know, happens this year during the springtime. And that's just been a way it's always worked. But what the librarians were saying is they could really optimize funds if it aligned better with their fiscal year, knowing that they have to plan resources in September of the school year. And so this might be a topic that we are exploring with the Department of Public Instruction, because I think we all want to make sure librarians are able to optimize the resources that we give them, knowing that they have better transparency into the budget around the fall of each school year instead of the end of each school year. So those are kind of the major takeaways from the survey and from the conversations that I had with the president of WMFTA and their legislative council. The other kind of takeaway is that I will be checking in with them quarterly on their funding, how they're using the special distribution, and any other concerns or feedback they might have for us. And I think this open line of communication will be beneficial, because this is what we do every day, is serving our librarians and media specialists in public schools. So any questions about WMTA and the impact of the special distribution and kind of our relationship moving forward with them and continuing to build that relationship?
No questions, Sarah, but thanks for that update. And I was just going to say I agree that to the extent that we can better align the timing of our distribution with budgeting that's done by the schools, that we should certainly explore that, though I realize that there may be challenges to changing the timing.
Yeah, and Josh, my kind of thoughts on that is once we know who the new DPI superintendent is, I think we can kind of continue that conversation. But it was something that they said, it's at the end of the year, they're not really sure what, you know, enrollment looks like the following year and kind of what their resources are going to look like. And so it would just, they could really make a difference having it in the fall. So I think that's absolutely something we should continue to explore. Okay. And then the only other update I had is under new businesses communication regarding the distribution. So I wish I had a drum roll, but as many of you know, this is the largest distribution with $39 million this year, and hats off to Rich and the investment team, especially during an unusual year to be able to provide $39 million is really a great success. And so Julie from my team has been working with Tom on kind of the rollout strategy to make sure this is being communicated. And it's going to be a kind of three-part approach. We've put together a press release very similar to what we've done in previous years. We have commissioners quoted. We also have Tom and the superintendent of public schools. And so we will make sure that is distributed. But then on top of that, we're doing kind of two additional things. The WMTA conference, where usually we have a big publisher clearinghouse check. And I know, Doug, you know this very well. It's one of the best parts of being a commissioner. We're not able to do that this year because of COVID. So they are doing an online conference. And I've just recorded a message for them. And on Sunday night, they've just asked me to deliver that. So that this Sunday, I think at 7. And if any commissioner wants to join, I think you guys have all received an invite. But please let me know. I think it's our opportunity to just share with them the great news and how much we appreciate the work that they are doing for their students and for their communities. So that is the WMTA conference. And then the third piece is social media. And so we will have a video that we will be posting on social media, on Twitter. And then the librarians are creating a fun Facebook profile cover that also celebrates the BCPL and this distribution. So we're really leaning in on the technology piece, which I think makes sense knowing that technology is part of what our money goes to, and the media specialists are excited about this. So are there any questions about how we're getting this word out, how we're working with WMTA, the media specialists, on sharing this information? But it's something to be celebrated, and even during COVID, I think it is, I think we're doing our best to do that. So thanks to the BCPL team and to the commissioners. $39 million is really exciting. So, and I know it makes a huge difference for these schools.
Great. Thanks for the update.
Any other? Of course. Since there's no questions on new business, we'll just move into reports. So, Rich, your Chief Investment Officer report.
Thanks, sir. I'm going to keep it short today. One thing that you might have noticed over the past month or two is that long-term interest rates have increased pretty significantly. You know, the yield on the 10-year Treasury bond has more than doubled to about 1.6%. You know, the immediate impact is that our loan program becomes more competitive because of the minimum interest rates that we have statutorily within that program. Secondarily, the value of our bond portfolio decreases as interest rates increase. However, because we normally hold bonds to maturity, there should be no immediate impact on portfolio income. We also currently have unrealized gains in the common school funds of more than $70 million. And so there's plenty of cushion to absorb any temporary losses in the bond portfolio. Over the longer term, you know, we will see if rates continue to rise, and that is going to depend on inflation expectations, which are being hotly debated right now. It's really a debate versus COVID recession versus, you know, federal recovery efforts. And we'll see what happens. But I think that the portfolio is well positioned and the diversification over the last few years has really improved our ability to absorb changes in the marketplace like we're seeing today. And that's all I have today.
Thanks, Rich. Tom.
So two things, one of them quick, the other one longer, and they seem to be in inverse proportion to their importance, but we are working on a potential land bank acquisition, which would involve approximately 1,500 acres located in Oneida and Iron Counties. And the purchase price would be somewhere in the range of $1.6 million, but the exact acreage and the price have not yet been determined since the exact determination of what parcels are in and out is still a little bit fluid, but we're hoping to be able to bring that to the board in the next meeting or two. So this is exciting. We've got money that's been sitting in the land bank for a while, and these parcels are great in terms of their being located contiguous to BCPL or very nearby, which improve our access, improve our revenue generation prospects, and improve our management efficiency. So it's kind of exciting for us. The next topic is what some people would consider a little bit boring, but for me, it's actually a little exciting. The migration of BCPL's legacy software. So I've been at BCPL for 16 years, but prior to my coming here, they actually had a team of six IT people that wrote the legacy software for our loan program, for land management, and everything else. Well, as most of you can imagine, 16 years ago, the software that was used to write that code was very different than it is today. And so as time went by, I became more and more nervous that our legacy software was written in language that wasn't necessarily supported anymore, especially since we have a fair amount of loans outstanding. So I kept leaning on IT people asking, what are the options here? Well, we could buy commercial off-the-shelf software. We could hire DOA. And we could hire an outside programmer. All of those options came back with a price tag well over $100,000. But Mike Kruger at BCPL, who's our IT manager, said, you know, I know somebody who works at DOT, and he's a really great programmer, and he's looking for some extra work, and he'd be willing to consider doing it as an LTE. And so about 18 months ago, Chuck Phelan came over to BCPL part-time and helped rewrite all that code into a current language, and we now have robust, secure, legacy software that should take us well into the future. And so my hat is off to Mike Kruger and to Chuck Phelan for tackling that project. You know, so many times in government, it's not good news when you take on a big IT project, but I'm saying with pride that it was done right and it was done at a decent cost. And so thanks to both of those individuals. So that's my report for the day.
Thanks, Tom. Very no, good. And I agree. It's good news to hear that.
Congratulations on both of those.
Technology is not always the most exciting thing, but it's super important. So thanks to Mike and Chuck for all the work put in. I know it's not easy. So. Any questions to Tom about technology or the land bank opportunity? So just board chair's report. Mine is just going to be brief. I know our next meeting is April 6th, and knowing that that's our first meeting of the second quarter, we talked about checking in on two things. One is just an update that Rich provides on the portfolio, the asset allocation, performance, but then also on our BCPL goals that we revisited at the beginning of the year. So wanted to make sure we were on track to kind of just share our progress with that for the April 6th agenda.
Actually, what we had talked about was doing those on a quarterly basis, but 1 month afterwards, because of the fact that if we, right. So in essence, that would be done in the first meeting in May, because for Rich to be able to provide that report at the first meeting in April, he would just be getting finished with the first quarter and wouldn't have all the numbers available for that. So first meeting in May is when that would occur.
So we'll be good at the first week of the first meeting in May.
Yes.
Perfect. Rich, I didn't mean to scare you.
it might have been a question.
I can only imagine your face. Wait, what? No, good point, Tom. Thanks for clarifying.
When he reached for his chest, I figured I better speak up.
Good. No, that's appreciate that. May, our meeting in May, we will be looking forward to that. That's it on my end. Any agenda items for our meeting on April 6th? Okay. See none. Thanks, everybody, for a great meeting, and have a good rest of the week. And we will, is there a motion to adjourn?
I so move, Doug.
I second.
Oh, great. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
Appreciate everyone. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.